This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas, powered by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning and this is The Breakfast Grill. Imagine being in an industry where the most important component of your business has wild volatile price swings. From a low of $73 to a high of $115 to then hover at $85 for just this year alone. Welcome to the oil and gas industry, one that has never been known for its stability but in recent years has been impacted by geopolitical tensions, global trade wars and the shift towards renewable energy. We speak to Datuk Kamarul Ridzwan Mohamad, founder and group CEO of USMA, on how his company has navigated these challenges, their strategy for growth and, of course, should we buy the stock of this listed company? Good morning, Datuk. Thank you for coming on the show again. So let's start with USMA's five-year transformation plan, which involves revising the oil and gas and non-oil and gas revenue to 60-40 from 2025. Is this honestly a case of change or be phased out, since even in Malaysia, Petronas is also making that switch where their target for non-hydrocarbon-related income will be 30%?
First of all, thank you for inviting me again. I always enjoy my time over here. So, for sure. I mean, our 5 years plan was done deliberately. We see there is a headwind in the oil and gas industry. It has been volatile and it has been cyclical since the existence. But in the last 7-8 years, it has been more volatile and the cyclic nature has been even worse. So I think because of that, we set up with our 5 years plan. And as you say, we are targeting 60%. Our core business will remain oil and gas, but we will operate differently. We want to be a bit more resilient. We want to make sure it derives from the value that we create. But the growth strategy comes from non-oil and gas. And I think it is not just a saying. We are significantly moving towards that. As end of the financial year 2022, 27% of our income already derived from non-oil and gas.
So, but there's still a shortfall, right? So how will that shortfall be made up? I mean, what are the jobs on the horizon?
I mean, the growth in non-oil and gas for USMA consists of two areas. Number one is the new energy, and the second one is our technology business. And in every business that we do, it takes a while before we actually accelerate. It's a gestation period. The non-oil and gas, currently the one that contributing to us is what you call new energy. Mm. Obviously, it's the runway that has been set up by the government for us is the MIRA, which is the Malaysia Renewable Energy Strategy Roadmaps. And there is significant opportunities over there, albeit it's very segmented, very, what you call, this fragmented. That's yes. What I mean. It's been diced too small.
Lots of players.
A lot of challenges. So we have to look at differently as well. Okay.
But if I just look at it from an operating profit perspective, new energy is still loss-making for USMA, right? Registering a loss of 2.3 million ringgit. In fact, when I look at the gross profit margins for solar, just 1%. So I want to know for USMA, when will it turn the corner? When will we see margin improvement and when will you be profitable?
Okay. When it comes to the new energy, we already decided from the onset that USMA will have three key business in there. Number one is the EPC business. Number two is the ownership, the PPA. And the third one is the operation maintenance / technology. Obviously, the what you call at the early stage of a business, we a lot with is EPC. And at the early stage, we are doing a lot of engineering. Okay. We anticipate the margin will be as is what we're seeing right now. But as soon as our PPA start producing electrons, energy, the change will happen. And we're looking at the end of 2023.
Okay. I want to focus on some of the existing projects that USMA has won, right? So let's look at the 50 megawatt large scale solar 4, LSS4 power purchase agreement, which is the PPA. Now on paper, it looks great because who doesn't want an LSS project as government is aiming to achieve this 31% renewable energy capacity mix by 2025. But I would say that these projects aren't as lucrative as LSS1 or 2. And that's the main reason is because solar panel prices seem elevated at the moment, right? So US dollar 28, 29 cents per watt, which is a huge jump from the 20 cents, 21 cents per watt as compared to when LSS tender period back in June 2020. So what's the situation like? Although I do understand the Energy Commission has granted y'all a four-year extension for your LSS4.
Yeah. I mean, we are in this business for the long run. Mm. Obviously, there is a hiccups on that one.
How much has cost escalated, just roughly, Dato?
I mean, if you look at the panel, it's contributing about 45% to 50% over the cost, and you see that it's 30% increment. So on that alone, it's already 15% incremental cost. Okay, and with the steel price, aluminum price has gone up. Obviously, that's also add to the cost. But you got opportunities as well. Okay, you got to do value engineering. So we have managed to reduce this certain cost. For example, our connecting cost has reduced dramatically from connecting about 10 kilometers. We reduce it to about 6 kilometers. So there is a lot of opportunity for us to reduce the cost as well. But as I said, we are here for the long run.
Yes.
The business, for the last 12 years, the cost of constructing solar panel, solar farm is going down until when we won the LSS4. So it's a bit unfortunate. But as I said, we are not here just for one shot. So we are here for the long run, and we have to mitigate that by trying to, be profitable. And as you rightly pointed out, EC has been, came out and then add additional 4 years to the PPA, which is aligned with anybody around the world anyway. I mean, if you go to Europe, the PPA is about 30 years, okay, instead of 21 years. So I think we are moving towards what is the industry standards anyway.
So what then will be the rate of return with this extension of the PPA? I mean, the other headwind, of course, is the weaker ringgit, right? Because most of the cost components are in US dollar terms.
I mean, the materials are in US dollars. So the greenflation is the significant headwind for us. But to answer your questions, I mean, it has not been the same rate of returns when we are tendering for the contracts, but we are still looking at a high single-digit rate of return for us.
Yeah. Okay, so then give us a progress report on the LSS work done to date. I mean, confident that it will be completed by the deadline? Because I understand from my digging around that the penalties are going to be onerous. So asset owners will face potential liquidated damages, payments, if they're not meeting the deadline for LSS4. And it's apparently five times higher than previous rounds of LSS. So it looks like the government is very serious to ensure that everybody finishes their jobs on time. So are you on schedule?
Yeah, we are. I mean, with exceptions to getting the financial close, which we are pretty close on getting the FC. I mean, there's only maybe one or two people who has completed the FC. Mm. But when it comes to technical progress, and getting approval from the municipal, from the local authorities and all that, we are on target. As soon as we get the AFC, then our S-curve will be as what we plan.
Okay, so no regrets bidding for LSS4 despite the big change in the landscape. Or maybe were you too aggressive when the tenders were done? Because it's such a competitive landscape, right? You've got players like Sam Aden, Solar Vest, who have been in this business for much longer.
Yeah, I mean, I have no regret. I think this is an important journey for Uzma. As we said, that we want to look at our business to be 60-40 moving forward, and new energy is a significant part of it. When we look at one of the headwinds for oil and gas is obviously the ESG. Mm. In reality, the amount of diesel, the amount of gas that we use to run our operation, for example, hydraulic workover and all that, we need roughly about 15 to 20 megawatt of our own PPA, not LSS, to offset our carbon emission. So we are very proactive in terms of looking at it. And for us, the ESG is about triple bottom line. Profit is very important for us. Rather than just doing the ESG for compliance, we also want to bring profit. Mm. And that's why we go into the new energy business. And so it has to bring profit to us. And we are very disciplined on that.
Okay. So will you be bidding for LSS5 then?
I mean, the LSS5 is still, what do you call the...
That's truly the test of whether you think this business is very lucrative, right? If you're going to bid for the second round.
True. And for me, the straight answer is yes, okay? Mm. The government also have recently issued a virtual PPA, okay? So for us, yes, this is the area that we want to be in. The price point may be different moving forward, okay?
Okay, let's talk about the EPCC part of the new energy business, which stands for Engineering, Procurement, Construction and Commissioning. So, correct me if I'm wrong, you have a 255 million ringgit order book now, right? But isn't this segment even more competitive than being a concession holder or asset owner because there are fewer barriers of entry? Is the margins even thinner on this segment of the business?
I think it's... I beg to differ. Actually, the PPA is where you have more challenges, okay? Because the EPC, you have the rate of return is higher, and yes, you have a construction risk period. Okay,
yes.
But if you we come with a 20 years experience in oil and gas, which we feel that project management is in the area of expertise that we have. So this is tend to be a less risky business for us. And middle of last year, we acquired a company with about 12 years of experience in EPC for solar business that adds some capabilities to our already have a project management experience. Mm-hmm. So for us, EPCC is in the area that we want to get in. It is crowded, but the crowded one is the smaller type of business. We are looking for a bigger business.
Yeah, and interestingly, you mentioned acquisitions because I do notice that your shift into new energy business was very much driven by acquiring selected companies, right? Has that strategy really worked for you, Dato? Did you overpay? And, you know, how have you actually turned things around for those companies, or do you let them run independently?
Our investment in the new energy come from single investment, single acquisitions of an EPC company. The rest is...
100% you own, right?
You owned it, okay? So I don't think we overpay for our investment. It comes with profit guarantees. So I think we have put significant due diligence to ensure the performance is there. When we acquire, I think Uzma have a knack when it comes to acquiring a company.
So you're very disciplined.
Yeah, I think we also integrate them into our system. Okay, if you look at our investment in oil and gas, for example, Stuttgart Ventures, when we first acquired them, they were doing something like 18, 20 million a year. Now they are doing 150, 160 million. When we acquire Mikas, they're doing about 10 million a year. At the peak, they are doing 100 million a year. So I think we are putting a system in place to ensure that the business growth is there and the governance is in place to ensure there is a sustainability in place as well.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is Dato' Kamarul Rezwan Mohamad, founder and group CEO of Uzma. After the break, can Uzma reap the benefits of Petronas's more aggressive capex plans? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9. Welcome back to the Breakfast Grill. In the hot seat this morning is Dato' Kamarul Rezwan Mohamad, founder and group CEO of Uzma. Before the break, can this oil and gas company pivot to achieve 40% revenue from new energy in a very competitive and challenging market? Now, Dato', let's talk about the oil and gas services segment of Uzma. Current order book stands at 2.15 billion ringgit. Is this mainly from your specialty, which is well decommissioning and the million-dollar question or the trillion-dollar question, without any replenishment, how long will that order book last?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, we have three significant business in our oil and gas. One is production solution, where we help our client to produce in the most effective way. And then well solution, which is inclusive of plant abandonment. And the third one is a trading and technology as well. So it's about 45, 45 and 10, okay? And our order book also about that. The revenue is about 45, 45, 10. Our order book is also roughly the same. With the current order book that we have, it will last us until 2024, 2025, okay? Our internal KPI is for every dollars that we take, we need to replenish with about 1.4 times more that we have taken out. We are slightly behind when it comes to our bid book in terms of our internal KPI. But we have seen in the last 12 months, especially when the oil price has revived, there is a significant bidding out there domestically domestically and internationally. I mean, it helps by the fact that Petronas has made it very clear that they're going to spend about $60 billion and majority of it is also domestic. So it helps calm down the market as well.
Okay.
And I think it augurs well to all the investing community. Yeah.
So roughly give us a gauge. I mean, how many jobs is Uzma tendering for? And like, what's the history of your job wins, right? So that's the key indicator for us in terms of your success rate.
Last year, when we look at our success rate was about 27%. And this is average. Mm-hmm. So certain areas that we have much higher winning rate and certain area we have a much lower winning rate. And that's come from the fact whether you already have capabilities or you building the capabilities or you already have a contract and it's just extension of the contracts. When it comes to well services, we have slightly higher winning rate because that is our core capabilities. Production services tend to be a long-term contract, so anything is related to contract extensions and all that. Yeah.
So I did read the Petronas activity outlook for 2022 to 2024, and of course you highlighted that CapEx spend has been bumped up to 60 billion ringgit. But at the same time, when I look at that activity outlook, when it comes to decommissioning of wells, which is one of your specialty, they've given it a steady outlook as more fields have come to the end of life. But Petronas has also stated that they are currently exploring innovative decommissioning solutions focusing on technology. So I want to know, is Uzma prepared for this? Do you have that technology and know-how in place?
I'm glad you asked this question because for us, the key survivabilities in oil and gas is about technology. And I think Uzma is known for pushing technology to the significant end to make sure it lasts. Recently, we make an announcement that we won the lightweight hydraulic workover for P&A. That is, I think, the first time that it has been tested in Malaysia.
This is proprietary, not proprietary?
It's proprietary to proprietary technology where we hope that we believe, at least with this lightweight hydraulic workover unit, we will significantly reduce the dependency on the marine support. When it comes to P&A offshore, marine support probably contribute about 40 to 45% of the cost. So with a lightweight hydraulic workover, we are trying to reduce that dependency for the marine support as well, thus reducing the cost.
Okay, yeah? Because what has become very obvious is Petronas is also a very different company due to the volatility of oil prices. And they've come out to say that they're very focused on cost. Mm. So I look at your GP margins. They're around 40%. So do you think these fat margins can stay in the future? Will Petronas be as generous when it comes to margins when you tender for new jobs?
Okay. I mean, it is a headwind to keep the margin at that level, okay?
Yeah.
But it requires significant investment as well. So that's why when you look at Uzma's numbers, our GP is good, but when it comes to our EBITDA,
yes,
then our EBIT then it's been demolished because we invested significantly into the equipment, into the technologies as well. So it is a balancing act. So if you want to make sure that you are stay ahead, that you have to invest. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a balancing work. For us, yes, technology is important. P&A is going to be here to stay because a lot of wells, especially in the Gulf, has been really pushed downward. Towards the end of their life. So there's going to be a lot of P&A activities moving forward. Yeah.
Okay, and you know, every year Petronas does award a substantial number of contracts to Bumiputra Oil and Gas Service Providers under its Vendor Development Program. Of course, the objective is to help nurture Bumiputra companies in the oil and gas industry so they can develop a track record. So, and you're a beneficiary of that. But over the long term, how are you reducing your dependency on Petronas for jobs? I mean, as their client, I presume they're your number one client?
Yeah, Petronas is our number one client. And I think we are happy to be their number one client as well. They are our number one client because they are a very good client. Okay, just a quick correction. Uzma Engineering is never a recipient of VDP. But we did acquire a company that has the VDP after their VDP has been, graduated. Okay. So I think that policy to develop the local company is a very good policy that has been developed by Petronas, and they are very committed to that, okay? And despite the challenges, despite the critics and all that, they've been doing that. And for us, it is we like to work with them. They are a good company. They are big. They are large.
Yes.
So they go everywhere. So we follow their footprints. But at the same time, we cannot be 100% depend on them. Okay?
So how successful are you when it comes to bidding jobs which are non-Petronas? Can you compete globally? Is your price competitive?
Yes, we are. I mean, before, many years ago, 50% of our revenue come from international. Last year is about 12%. Our part of our 5 years plan, 30% of our income will come from international. We have worked as far as in Europe, Africa, and in Australia as well. The current growth area for us at the moment is in Thailand, in Indonesia, in the region.
So, Dato, let's talk about your share price, okay? It's 36 cents, all-time low. You know, and it from even from last quarter results, it beat street expectations. So why do you think USMA is so unloved? Is this due to the fact that your return on equity is just 3.5%?
I think I'm not quite sure whether we are not loved, but I think it's more like the industry is probably not been loved. Okay, unfortunately, if you look at worldwide, what you call index, so if you look at in US, people using the what you call this energy select sectors, which giving about 60% return in comparison to Russell 1000, which negative 13%. Okay, and if you look at Bloomberg, crude oil. What you call this energy selects, they are giving 90% and 144% return. Unfortunately, closer to home, our energy index is trading about 50-40% of what we were before in 2019.
Yes.
We are trading about 600-700 index versus 1200-1300
in the
back
past.
Then, in
is
the
it,
past.
Is this shift because of the ESG mandates?
I think a lot of the scar from the last downturn scared the investors in there. I mean, if you look at the PE for most of the energy sectors, they are significantly trading at very low PEs. I mean, we lost our market cap from 1 billion to roughly about 100 plus million at the moment. So it's a good time to invest in oil and gas sectors.
Okay, so one last question and you've got 30 seconds. So is this the right time to buy USMA stock then?
The strictly answer yes, because I think we have put a system in place to weather the headwind, especially in the ESG. So we diversify our business, not depending in the one client, and it's significantly cheaper than any index, any shares that are available in the market. So if I want to answer yes, it's yes, the best time to go out and buy USMA shares at the moment.
On that note, thank you for your time on The Breakfast Grill. Was Datuk Kamarul Rezwan Mohamad, founder and group CEO of USMA. I'm Wang Shaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, where unlimited potential begins.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.